Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 3, season 11. We are back again for our third episode of this season. Anyway, listen, before we, without further ado, we've got our Gary Boyd fact. I'm bowling them in now, left, right and centre, even before I introduced who's with us. Well, you probably know who's with us already, but anyway, between 2005 and 2012, Citroën always had a WRC car with number one on the side window. In 2013, Seb Loeb only did a part season, so the number one did disappear on a Citroën at that very event. In 2018, all the Citroën's cars will have at least one digit on the side window. If you look at the entry, it will be 11 for Craig Breen, 10 for Chris Meek, and 12 for Mads Osberg. There you go. And that's a Gary Boyd fact for this week's Absolute Rally.
Cheers, Gary.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Obviously, straight away, Jack Bennion, hello.
Hello, how are we doing?
I think we're good. We're good. Ryan Champion is away in Ibiza, doing what Ryan Champion does.
DJing.
Yeah, DJing. Imagine Ryan DJ.
Pasha.
I don't know why that makes me laugh so much. and, of course, we've got Trevor Agnew as well. Hello, Trev.
Hello, everyone.
Right, we're excited. It's Rally Sweden. We're going to have WRC live. I've seen the countdown and everything on the board. I've been watching previews and everything else. I want to do Sweden right at the top of the program, boys. Jack, I'm excited. I know you're going to be excited, obviously.
Yeah, definitely excited. The thing I'm excited for most is that we've got no worries about snow, have we? We seem to have some good snowy roads in Sweden, which normally is not something you would talk about. But in the past few years, it feels like we've been very gravelly, haven't we? So it's nice to see that returning. And Jari Matti Latvala talking about snow banks and things like that—that's very exciting to me.
Trev, I think Jari Matti. It's you know, when you see I've seen some interviews with him, obviously read some quotes and stuff like that. Of course, in Jack's wonderful publication this week. It's one of those events where Jari Matti seems to have a swagger, doesn't he?
Yeah, he likes it there. Of course, he got his win there 10 years ago, which seems incredible. He was 22, I think, at the time. And last year, we didn't see him as winning it last year. We didn't think the car was up to it. He definitely, if there's one rally that he'll want to win this year, it's definitely Sweden.
It's, again, you know, we're always looking for a confident Jari, and I guess Jack, you know, you guys have, David wrote an excellent piece as ever. He's just talking about a decade on from what Trev's just mentioned there, Jari winning it. I suppose then we all thought this was going to be the start of something dramatic, and, you know, we probably seen more than the 16 wins he had thereafter.
Yeah, it's quite ironic in a way, isn't it? Because we've got the similar thing with kind of Oit Tanak coming through now, haven't we? And doing a similar sort of thing. You know, his performance on the Monte Carlo was fantastic, as we all know. And, you know, he kind of looked like he had Jari Matti Latvala at an arm's length, really, on that event. So it's going to be very interesting to see how Jari reacts. I think it's probably, apart from maybe Finland, the perfect event to follow Monte for Jari to kind of get back into his groove, one of his favourite events and one that we know he's gone well on before. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he reacts to that sort of emerging threat of Oit Tanak. And, you know, we saw a lot over the winter break, not that we have much of a winter break in the WRC, about Jari Matti Latvala saying that, you know, Oit Tanak was going to take a while to get up to speed. He wasn't going to be right there on some of the events, and that he was going to need to settle into the team. And what we've actually seen is Oit Tanak on one event, you know, the first event, be absolutely brilliant. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that, you know, the driver Jari Matti Latvala, who we all know is quite a, you know, an emotional character, and we've seen him work with mental coaches and things like that in the past. It's something that he does work on a lot. It'd be interesting to see how this new sort of Tanak situation plays out for him.
Trev, just going on from what Jack was saying there, I want to come back to that in a second with regards to the coaching side of things, obviously, which is something we always seem to talk about, obviously, with what you do. I think we mentioned this on the podcast the other week as well with regards to, obviously, the testing rules and things like that. And, you know, this is one that seems to be, you know, right up to, you know, other than Finland, Sweden is their event, isn't it, it seems?
Yeah, it's dead simple from where they are. I think it was Julian Porter said in the podcast, remember, there is a restriction on testing WRC, but if you can test within 50 kilometres, I think it is, of your base, then you're okay to go. And, of course, in where they are in Pupula, just outside Jyväskylä, They can literally leave the workshop and they're on the roads that are representative of Finland when the weather's good. Of course, in the wintertime when they're covered in snow, off the go. So lots of opportunity to go and fine-tune that car, which, you know, the only thing if I remember right from last year in Sweden, it was a little bit nervous over the jumps there, the high-speed jumps. So and I've read somewhere, Jari Matti reckoned that they've got that dialed out of the car. And yeah, it's certainly formidable for the rest of the opposition because we know the car is fast as well.
Do you know what? I wasn't even going to go to this, but and this is where the little boy inside of me gets a little bit excited. Collins Crest, right? Are we all still Jack? It was Bryn Nielsen, of course, in the R5 car. I got this record. I watched the jump last night, which was amazing. With all the downforce and everything now, I don't potentially see it being broken by a wheel car, and it seems odd to say that.
Yeah, I think the R5's got to be favourite again, haven't they, for this year, and for the same reason as last year, really. It looked like the aero kind of hampered the distance that the WRC cars were jumping, didn't it? So, yeah, I think... favourite is someone in an R5 and someone as crazy as Pranilton, because he's a cracking guy, and he loves rally, I'm sure. He's got a proper sim set up in his home and has got quite a few top 10 fastest stage times on various different computer games and things like that, so he's a proper rally nut, and he'll be looking to break that again, I'm sure.
Trev, why do rally drivers like to fly?
The drivers do. The co-drivers aren't so keen, Tony. And Vargas in the stage where it is, actually, what everybody forgets about is straight after the jump, there is a right hand that nips up quite a bit. It's very close to the end of the stage as well. The other factor you need to take into consideration as well is because the ploughs are going through the snowbank. So, you know, you'll see probably this week if you've been looking on the recce where drivers are adjusting their notes just to compensate for the snowbanks that are in there. Remember, a snowplough has to go through it. And, of course, it can cut a different line slightly. Different line, which will affect the notes. So the approach to that, if you watch the in cars, the guys are approaching it, is always quite interesting to see if they're lining one up or not, and you can usually pick it. And certainly Mads Osberg, he always liked to have a go at it. He's in a World Rally car this year, but there was a chance he might have been in an R5 car before he did his deal with Citroën. That would have been an interesting one to see. I think the jump's something like 46 metres, Jack, is it?
I'm not sure off the top of my head, to be honest, Trev, but it sounds about right.
I think it was. Mm. I watched it last night. And I tell you what, Trev, and I mentioned this, I think, when we had Gus on last week, and I think Tom Williams, I even put it to it. And again, do the notes for Sweden, as it stands, and as Jack was saying before, you know, it looks like a perfect Sweden, the big snow banks, we've got lots of snow and everything else. Do the notes need to be actually more precise now? Because there's just it's just white otherwise, isn't it? All you've got is white. So no, surely they have to be better, don't they?
Yeah, it's more of a challenge from a co-driver's point of view, as I've pointed out a few times. From about 10 years back, certainly 8 years back, the engineers always got you sat a lot lower in the car. So in reality, you don't really look out. The only time you can probably see the road is if you've gone downhill and there's a hill going up the other side of it. You can peep out and have a look then. And it is a challenge. You've got everything whited out. We don't wear glasses as co-drivers in the same way that the drivers do. But there's one particular stage, I think it must have been 2000 or 2001 that we did. And it, like this, proper snow banks, the plough had been through it. Of course, when that happens, there's not that much room on either side of the car. But there's one particular section, I'm sure it was about a quarter of a mile long, and there were five crests in this strip, and five crests were blind. And from a co-driver point of view, as you know, you drivers aren't that patient. So if we made a mistake and we called the wrong note, third crest in, but what I haven't told you so far is after the fifth crest, it was about 100 yards, 100 metres, and then there's a square left. So as a co-driver, you know, as you say, there's no landmarks. You have to feel what the car is doing. And of course, they're not jumps, so the car's not taking off at any point. You have to feel the crest and try and pick out, if you can, something that will guide you through it. But imagine if I called on the fourth crest instead of the fifth one, that the 90 was coming up and he had to brake in the middle of a straight. That would be probably the last mistake you'd make.
Jack, apparently you feel it all in your bum.
Yeah, apparently you do. That's what all the good co-drivers say, isn't it?
But it's not only that, Tony. You know, as you know, when you get to that level, you're not talking about getting the right second. You're talking about split second delivery of those notes as well. So, you know, you build it up as you gain your experience. But you're right in what you said. That is a challenging event from a co-driver's point of view. Good spot.
It's just one of those things where, obviously, you know, even from the limited stuff that I've done, and you know Jack, all right, we've took the mic a few times, but obviously you've done an event now, so you know you can relate a little bit to this stuff as well, where, you know, we'll all have a marker or something like that. I'm going to talk about, we're doing the Cambrian Rally this weekend, so I've been doing notes and stuff like that, and I like to have markers in and things like that. Jack, I don't know whether the event you did, whether you put built stuff in like that, but in Sweden, yeah, you don't have that, do you? It must be so difficult.
Yes. Like you say, it's just a wall of white, really. I think you said earlier on, wasn't it? It's really difficult to kind of pick stuff out. And then, you know, if you've got to contend with the fact that, you know, fog might fall at any point. There's a load of different variables that can come into these kind of things. And it just shows you how talented these guys are, really. And, you know, we're all very guilty of saying, you know, Sebastian Ogier won the event. But, you know, I think people like Julian and Gracia don't get enough credit for what they do. It's a really difficult job, and anyone who's listening to the podcast who has competed in any capacity really will know how difficult it can be to sit in either seat when it comes to writing or hearing or using page notes in general. So yeah, it's definitely a big task.
Trevor, we always, obviously, you know, it's the highest level, we always look to the winners and everything else. I find fascinating, and again, maybe I'm not comparing myself, but maybe it's because of how I go rallying, whatever it may be, I don't know. But people like Henning Solberg, and what I mean is by this, and I mean with the greatest respect, Henning Solberg doesn't pull his tripe out to put deals together. Okay, he hasn't been quite prolific recently, but he's done it, you know, a number of times, and he's managed to put a budget together for this particular event again. And he's not going there to win, is he, Trev? And you know, he'd like to, and I'm sure if Henning sat down, he'd say, I'm going there to win. But the reality is he's not going to win, and he probably knows it. But there's something special about these guys that keep coming back and finding ways. And I think sometimes there's the obvious story of the winner, but also some of these guys that keep coming back and finding ways of coming back in WRC.
Yeah, well, the reason he does it is it's absolutely fantastic fun to go to Sweden and pull big skids at high speed. Even on the recce, it's always been good fun from that point of view. Different, of course. It's very close to being his home rally in Norway. And what we forget in the UK anyway is just how profile sport is in the northern part of Europe. So where we have the one show in the UK, which is on prime time, 7 o'clock, Henning Solberg could appear on that show. And on the back of that, then he's got a big profile together with Petter. So that helps, of course, when they show the rally program then on prime time as well. That helps to get the sponsors. And of course, you know, he's had relationships with his sponsors for many years now. And they can find a way to do it. And he's obviously a very good salesman. And there's a lot of people could take a lot out of his book when it comes to that. But it's just the thrill of going and doing it, you know. And you can tell by Henning, he's one of the best people you can interview at the end of a stage, because he just tells it as it is and is always highly entertaining.
Jack, he is a bit of a dream come true, isn't he? I suppose for stage end, and I suppose for, you know, you're always going to get a quote, you're always going to get something from. I just think, you know, again, we keep talking about characters. When I seen it was confirmed and I seen the pictures of the car and everything else, I was so happy, because I know we're going to get some quality.
Yeah, he's one of them people who kind of transcends competition, isn't he, really? It doesn't really matter where Henning Solberg finishes on the rally.
Sorry to interrupt, Jack. That's what I was trying to say before, but I didn't say it as well as that. Thank you. Transcend the results. There you go. Thank you. Sorry. Carry on, Jack.
No, you're welcome. That's pretty much it. I mean, he's one of these people who you always look for on entry list, like you said, to see if he's there. And, you know, he's one of them people you like listening to at the stage end and seeing on the TV. He's one of those guys that actually as well, speaking from a point of view where, you know, I've interviewed him on the phone and stuff as well outside of rallies, and he's just not the same character. I think it needs a rally situation for him to be sort of all the adrenaline pumping and getting to the stage end for him to really come out of his shell. And boy, does he come out of his shell when he does.
Especially when he tips it upside down and uses the car as a snowplow and gets to the stop line. with his face full of snow. And that'll probably feature in the highlights.
Well,
of
we mentioned that last week because we had Alex Carani on, who sits with Crazy Leo over in Canada. That's exactly what happened to those guys. They were shoveling snow out at the stage arrival. And just the imagery when I watched the video back, and apologies, by the way, guys, if you didn't seek out the video and you want to find it, drop me a line or go on Crazy Leo's Twitter feed. You will find the video there. But I don't know whether you guys seen this one, but literally they were shoveling snow out of the car, you know, and as I say, the analogy when we were talking to Alex last week was it was exactly like that. And it was in that the most ugly, I don't care what anybody says, the 307 was the most ugly World Rally car ever.
It wasn't pretty, I'll give you that. It didn't seem to work on the suspension.
It was what we call a tentatua. Tentatua.
Okay. Yeah.
If you don't know what that is, then ask me privately and I'll tell you. Anyway, a couple of other bits and pieces before we move away from Sweden. I don't normally do predictions, boys. Right. And we spoke obviously about Yari at the top. We you know, I don't really want to go through the teams and dissect it, you know, we'll do that next week, we'll do that after the event at all. But can I put you both on the spot and say, are we all going on Yari?
It depends on the weather. First off, we don't know if the snow arrives, and as you know, what we want is the ideal scenario is to have the snow, then have a big frost to get down to minus 20, freeze it really solid, no snow on the top, and then everybody's got a clean run. But if there's any snow on the top at all, you only need to look at even at Monte Carlo. No, it's not the same, but if there's a layer of snow on the top, first on the road is going to suffer. And that will go right down to probably third where Yari Matti is. If that's the case, then probably people like Andreas Mikkelsen, even Hayden Padden, bit of a decent road order and have a lot to prove, will be out to give it a big yahoo, I think. But it's it depends on the weather at this point, is all I could really say at that one.
Jack Bengian, are you just gonna give me a name as opposed to a full breakdown like Trev did?
Yeah. I could do, couldn't I? No, I won't do that. I'll give you a little bit more information if you like. Unless you're trying to save time, in which case I'll just give my
answer. That's fine, let's debate, let's discuss. Go on.
I think, having seen what happened in Monte Carlo, I think Wout Tanak is a faster driver than Jari Mattilatvala in that Toyota. So if it's going to be a straight fight between Toyotas, I think Wout Tanak's going to win. And I know that'll be a controversial thing to Absolute Rally listeners, but that's just my opinion. I think Wout's sort of transcended that middle phase where he competes on certain events and maybe isn't quite there on others. I think he's a challenge on every single event now. And if we believe that the Toyota is going to be the kind of car to beat in Sweden, then for me, I think Hoyt will win. Saying that, I also think, as always, it's very difficult to rule out Sebastian Ogier, and even more so on this event because everyone's going to be so close together. I think that's how it usually plays out, isn't it? It's been decided on the last day quite a few times in recent years. I think based on that, it's going to take people driving very consistently but also very quickly at the same time. The best man to do that is Sebastian Ogier. So I think it will be either Wout Tanak or Sebastian Ogier, and if you put me on the spot, I'll say Wout Tanak.
Trev, are you impressed the fact that Jack managed to get transcended into two completely different sections of the program in under 15 minutes? Maybe we should have a word of the week. That would be good. Trev, I'm going to come back to you very, very quickly. Oddly enough, I'm going to ask you, who's going to finish third?
Elvin Evans.
I think
Elvin Evans is one to watch like in this ride. Like the reason I say that is, you think of what he did in the R5 car a couple of years back, where he absolutely blitzed everybody, fair and square, blew them away on their home event, those Northern European boys. So he's quick on snow. It was all, you know, he's been in Sweden a fair chunk as well. He's been there a few years. So someone to watch who, if he gets a good run, he's consistent.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
One other thing we should talk about, Henning Solberg. Petter put out a tweet the other day with Oscar testing over the same stretch of road, and Oscar beat him. Did you guys see any of this footage, by the way?
I'm not seeing this yet.
Search it out. Yeah, apparently Oscar pinched a few seconds off him. in the 208, which I just think is great. I just love it. I loved the Solbergs. You know what? I'm not a big lover of reality TV, but you know the way they had like basically that program with Ozzy Osbourne, where it was just kind of like, behind the scenes with the whole family. I just love one for the Solbergs. At home with the Solbergs. I just think it'd be brilliant.
Get Endemol on the case.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Was that Petter and his son,
so, yeah.
Tony? Yeah, so Petter's son
Oliver,
is
sorry.
Oliver.
Yeah.
Henning's son is Oscar. Not that that's confusing at all whatsoever.
Yeah. Sorry, I think I've got that the wrong way round. But that's thank you for correcting me, because you knew I was going to get pelters once the podcast dropped. So thanks for looking after me, Jack Bengen.
Always looking out for you, Tony Simpson.
I know you are. Listen, speaking of snow and ice and everything else, and I made reference to it before, of course, we had Alex Karani on last week. Canada unveils plans, Jack. I've seen this something on social media. You guys have done something on it today as well, to try and become the WRC winter event.
Yeah, they've got a candidate event that they're going to run. So it's going to be, well, it seems like it's a week of events putting themselves forward, which I'm sure you're going to move on to another one in a minute. It's a shame we've not got Ryan Champion with us to talk about that one, really. But it's looking sort of, it's a bit of a long-term plan, I'd say, from this Canadian event, looking at sort of a five-year plan to get into the WRC. So it'll be interesting how quickly they come up with this candidate event and if they can actually run it when they say they'd like to. But yeah, you know, I think the more options, the better, I think, when it comes to winter events. And, you know, if they can put on a good event, then I'm sure the WRC will consider going there.
Obviously, North America, and I suppose, you know, if you're Canadian listeners, I apologise. But, you know, people have tried to do stuff in the States. Obviously, we had the Olympic rally, you know, many years ago. You know, Canada can offer this particular. Would this be a compromise for all that, you know, all of a sudden we've got this very, very good winter event and it is North America, it's Canada, but technically it's kind of ticking the box for that part of the world.
Yeah, I'm sure I saw this week that Canada was part of the World Championship. I don't actually remember Canada as having a round of the World Championship. I don't know where that one went or how didn't get that registered. I can't even remember the name of the events that might have been the World Championship. But of course, Martin Rose over there now, he's got his B&B in Whistler. He's a Canadian citizen. We need to get him involved and get him up there and advising him on it. I think definitely winter rallies are great. That part of the world would be great to have a winter rally.
We're hearing various things, and again, we talked about characters before, and I wasn't probably going to go here, but I always make notes and stuff as we're chatting and stuff. I just looked down at my pad then when we were talking about Henning before, and we were talking about people who, as to use Jack's term, transcend the results. Ken Block was a name that I wrote down, and of course, you know, again, I'm using that, I'm using Canada, you know, North American thing again, Jack. You know, Ken kind of transcends results, and you know, there's been various rumors for performances. Is he going to come and do some WRC rounds and things like that? He's the kind of catchment guy, isn't he, for that part of the world to perhaps drag an event over there.
You're clutching at straws a bit there, Tony. I think
definitely.
That's a bit of speculation, isn't it? That's a bit of heavy speculation, that one. No, I like it. I like where you're going with it. As we said, or as you said, he's a very big character in the world of kind of, well, anything with an engine, really, isn't he? He does transcend rallying, and he does sort of appeal to lots of different motorsport fans, doesn't he, with his drift videos and things like that. So, yeah, I'm sure Ford would be interested in sort of using him as a tool to promote that sort of event. But, yeah. I think that's a heavy bit.
It's unfounded completely, but you know, I've seen some bits and pieces over the last few weeks about, you know, maybe Ken doing some WRC rounds or whatever. But you just think that, you know, these types of people who can make stuff like that happen, they can get people interested in it. That's not to say that, you know, the Canadian rally fraternity, you know, wouldn't embrace a WRC event. Obviously, they are going to do a candidate event. But I'm just thinking that, you know, rallying is such a tiny thing over in that part of the world. And I know people who do the championships obviously would probably disagree. But, you know, rallying in America, tiny thing when you compare it to like a NASCAR and things like that. And, you know, in Canada, again, it's you know, you look at someone like Antoine, of course, who's kind of, you know, he's a multiple champion over there, but, you know, has done the American series as well. And you just think, well, maybe if they pooled their resources a little bit and got that event, and, you know, I suppose I don't know too much about it, but obviously the way, you know, Sweden and Norway have kind of worked a little bit together and things like that in the past, and obviously on events, I'm not saying that maybe we go cross-border, but I just wonder whether, you know, if the two countries pooled their resources, whether it would be good for rallying in that part of the world. That's where it came from, Jack, and yes, it is purely me just having a stab in the dark.
One thing I will say, Tony, is if you look at where we go in terms of the WRC and especially with new events and stuff, it always comes back to the manufacturers, doesn't it? The WRC can never go to an event if the manufacturers don't back it, I don't think. And with Ford becoming more involved with M Sport this year, you know, if there's any movement there over the next couple of years and Ford become, you know, even more involved, then they might be very attracted towards an event in North America somewhere. So I think looking at that, I think a lot of whether this event happens will come down to whether the manufacturers like it. And I'm sure more input from Ford in M Sport would sort of make them more attracted to having an event there. So yeah, maybe there is, do you know what, you can, instead of doing a podcast the week that this event happens and Ken Block is back in it, you can just play this conversation back.
I think so. Trevor, am I talking bollocks?
No, I can see where you're coming from with it, but it's certainly left field.
I thought I'd put it out there. Now, obviously, the other event that's been banging the drum, I'll come to you first, Trev. Is Safari, you know, making some plans, certainly financially, to aim to be back in WRC by 2020? Do we see it realistically, the way the sport's changed, and you know certainly what, you know, the FIA want from events now, and certainly what the teams want from the events, you know, is it just something that we look back through rosy coloured spectacles and go, it was amazing, but modern rallying doesn't really work in that particular environment?
A couple of things. Because I've got the reigning champion in my books, it's going to be a big challenge if it does come for me to get him a drive in the event, isn't it? That's big pressure, that is. But John Tote has always said he wants the World Rally Championship to go to Africa. He wants an African event there. And the teams, from a point of view of the testing, it's just phenomenal the amount of money it would cost to get cars Safari ready to make sure they're robust enough to get around. That's the biggest obstacle, I think. And I don't know how those conversations have gone on. And you know, to get the budget together, a couple of million euros or whatever the equivalent would be to run an event, that's probably the easy bit when it comes to the Safari. It's just trying to get people motivated enough and the manufacturers having the budget to go there.
If only we could go to Ryan Champion, Jack Benyon, and I mean that with the greatest respect, as you said before.
Yeah, because no one cares what I've got to say about this, but not compared to what Ryan I've said. Anyway,
yeah, go on.
I sat there on Monday morning putting this page together, and smoke and mirrors, as you always like to talk about an absolute rally. Smoke and mirrors for MN is David Evans sends all his words to me, and then, you know, well, me or Matt James in the office, and then we pick out the pictures and put it all together. So I spent a little bit of time picking out a picture for this story, and settled on a McRae winning in 2002 with a Focus. But 70% of me sat there thinking, this is not going to happen. There's no way this is going to happen. There's, you know, they can't close all the roads, and, you know, they're not even going to get insurance for the event these days. Never, you know, so much has changed in the last 10 years when it comes to insurance, health and safety, and all that, you know, risk assessments and all that kind of stuff. And then the other 30% of me sat there and looked at this picture of the Focus and just got really childishly excited, like I was 8 years old, that this event needs to come back. It doesn't matter what's happening outside of the world of rallying. You know, this is an event that needs to be there. So whether we get a shortened version of the, you know, the original Safari or not is something that's kind of up in the air. And I noticed that most of the details that have come out about this has not referred to mileage in any way, shape or form, or given a, you know, proper indication of how long the event would be. So maybe they're looking at doing something a little bit shorter than what the, you know, the original Safari would be. And but I think we, you know, as rally fans, we all, it's well trodden ground, isn't it? We all want to see this event back. It's something completely different to any of the other events, and it offers a challenge that none of the other events can offer either. But we've got to be realistic in looking at things moving forward. And for me, the event in its old guise doesn't work either from a health and safety point of view with the WRC, and also from, you know, a point of view that, that rallying has changed and the cars really aren't built for it anymore. You know, think how about not just how much it's going to cost to get the cars over there, but how much it's going to cost to design a car that's strong enough to put up with a safari. You know, all these things kind of add up to, you know, making it very difficult for this event to come back in the way it was. So hopefully they're going to come up with something clever that means, you know, it's going to keep the cost down for the manufacturers, and we're still going to get a good spectacle in that area of the world, because that's what we all want.
The East African Safari Rally Sprint, that's what you're talking about, Jack.
Exactly, exactly. If only we knew the winner of that to tell us more about
this. Oh, no. Is it, where yeah. is he? He's DJing. He's DJing somewhere.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just moving on. There's another story, Jack, you've put together today on that same page, and it's with regards to Pirelli. And I think it's I'm fascinated by Pirelli of late. And the reason why I say that is obviously they kind of took this step away from rallying for a period, and now the back, and you know, the back with JWRC, and you know, I remember I'm thinking, it's funny enough, I mentioned the Most Ugly World Rally Car before, but there was one man who actually made it half look okay, was when Gigi Garli had the Pirelli backing in the 307. And this story today, Jack, is with regards to Pirelli now basically going to their local ASN and now trying to put something in place to find, you know, another Gigi, another Mickey Biasion or whoever, really. And I just think it's an interesting story. A Pirelli, you know, I don't know whether you've picked up on it, a Pirelli obviously now taking rallying a lot more seriously than what they were, say, 2 years ago.
Well, if you know how much it costs to take someone from the bottom of the sport to the top of sport in 5 years, then you'd say, yeah, they are very interested, because they're going to have to put a hell of a lot of money into this to make it work. You know, it's a brilliant sort of level of investment if it's what they're actually going to do. And it has been a long time since Italy has had a proper championship eligible kind of driver, really, someone who challenges for the title every year. Mickey Biasion's the last one you kind of have to go back to, isn't he, really?
Although you talk about characters, I have to say this, and if people who've listened to our podcast for a long, long time and remember it when it was Total Rally and remember the heyday of Total Rally, still without doubt the best guest, and I mean this with the greatest respect to all our guests, was Gigi Garli when he'd had a glass of wine. And I don't know whether it's in the archives anymore or whatever, or if some people have still got it. But we got Gigi on his way to Mamma Gali's, and he'd had a glass of wine. And he was telling us then about how he was going to try and get back to WRC, which unfortunately now is probably, 7 years ago, we probably recorded that. But Gigi was without doubt a character, and he drove with passion. And were you around the same time of M Sport is when Gigi was there, Trev?
I came just after. I think the Stalbert sponsorship was after we were there, so that's probably 2007.
I thought you were going to have some gold for us for a second then, Trev. I thought you were going to have some gold.
No, I did meet him during the production championship time. He was about. I have met him, and Guido, his co-driver, who he knocked about a
jeez,
bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were good buddies, good pals, and you have these characters sometimes that you arrive on and make life a bit more jolly. But very, his car control is great, his talent is great, and another one of those drivers, just a joy to hear at the end of the story.
Pirelli, Trev, you know, I was around PWRC, working in PWRC, obviously you've won it, but I was working around it in the heyday of Pirelli Stars driver. Obviously it gave us Hayden Padden and Oyd Tanak, and obviously now we've got the juniors. It feels now there's some cohesion, and you know, obviously we had the Junior World Rally Championship, we had the DMAC Drive Trophy and things like that, and you know, I think probably the DMAC Drive Trophy probably was the one that was a lot more popular, I think it's fair to say, than JWRC. We've now got these things kind of mashed together, albeit with a different tyre supplier and everything else. Are we realistically now going to see drivers coming through it? Do you think we've got, you know, a bit more cohesion again, a bit like when we had the Pirelli Stars driver?
Well, a couple of things. One is Paul Hembury was a fantastic ambassador for the World Rally Championship, especially around young drivers. Probably a lot of people just don't understand or underestimate the amount of resource he put towards helping young drivers across the world, really across Europe anyway, to get them right the way back from McRae and Burns times, right the way through. And, you know, when Paul moved across to Formula One, which he did, that started to drop off a little bit. So I don't know, I don't watch Formula One now, I've lost touch of Paul Hembury, but, you know, if he had anything to do with it, it'd certainly be a lot of promotion and rallying. Again, Jack talks about the amount of money it takes to take someone from the bottom level to the top, but you've got to remember that this is Italy, it's an Italian company, and, you know, a couple of million euros or 3 million or 4 million euros, whatever it may be, if they're going to put two drivers through a program to get them up there. In the bigger scheme of things, it's not a lot of money for big companies like that, and there should be more doing it. There's certainly plenty of people throughout this world that are interested in motorsport, and they would get a hell of a buzz out of taking a young unknown driver and taking them right up to world championship status. You know, one of the jobs that I was lucky enough to start was way back in 2001, 2002, I think it was. At the time, we were trying to find the next driver for the Subaru World Rally Team, and we had a plan where we were going to try and find a Chinese driver. So I put together a proposal. We got DR, David Richards was keen to see this happen as well. So we started off a program. I even went to the first round of the Chinese Championship to see what the talent was like there. And then, if you remember, the whole SARS thing kicked in. And that was the end of the project, really. And that was just before Martin Rhodes and I decided to do the Production World Rally Championship. So, you know, if you get the right people involved with the right motivation, and I've certainly met plenty of people over the years who love the excitement. And just remember as well, there's a lot of those guys that if they weren't spending their money, they'd be giving it to the taxman.
Yeah, that's always an excuse that I've used, but it never quite washes with everybody, I must admit. But still, there you go. There you go. Yeah. Boys, before we crack on, have we got anything else we want to get off our chest before we actually get to any other businesses? I'll be honest, I want to talk about quite a lot of work that you've done, and excellent work, Jack, in MN this week. And again, we run the risk of being UK centric, and, you know, I do realise that we have downloads all over the world and we do appreciate them, but there's, you know, the rally family is as cliched as it sounds. We all have our issues, and we've got growing issues over here, Jack, and you've done something, the amount of work that you've clearly put into this, along with obviously some of your colleagues as well, and, you know, David Evans has wrote a nice piece as well. But with regards to the state of UK rallying, and you wanted to start the debate and get people talking, for our listeners perhaps who are not in this country or have not yet seen the paper, just tell us a little bit about what you set out to try and do, and what we're trying to achieve, I guess.
I think you did a really good job of summing it up there, Tony. I think, you know, is you can go down to, you can go to any service park in any rally in the UK, and every single person in that service park will tell you how to fix everything and how everything needs to be a lot better than it is, and how they go about doing it. But in actual fact, putting it into practice is very difficult. So I've been, over the past few months, speaking to lots of different rallying people, gathering the thoughts of people from the top of the sport to the bottom of the sport, and really kind of working out what the major problems were, and I've done my best to kind of chart those in this week's MN, and there'll be a lot of controversial views in there that people don't agree with, but hopefully this is something that can really get people talking and you know, brings people to the table for some of the problems that we do have. So, you know, mainly, you know, probably the biggest problem is the running order issue we have here, where we've got sort of contradicting ways of seeding rallies, where, you know, we used to be able to put two-wheel drive and historic cars at the front of the road so that they got better road quality and didn't break as much, and that's changed since 2015. So now they run at the back and they get really rutted roads on events. So that kind of class of rallying, especially two-wheel drive 1400 type rallying, has pretty much disappeared. So bringing them back is very important, because it's a great way into the sport for young people, and that's, you know, so obviously another problem rallying has in the UK is bringing through enough people who can sort of go from the top of the bottom of the sport to the top of the sport. So that's a major issue. And then lots of other general things, really. Like we've looked into the state of historic rallying and what that needs to succeed with Paul Lawrence, and he's looked at some of the things they're doing to try and get around the seeding problem with running events in different ways so that we can get two-wheel drives and historics further forward on the road. And then we've also spoken to good friend of the show, Jamie Edwards, who looks after Rally for Wales. He's one of the directors there, and they're responsible for repairing roads on rallies in the UK. So we spoke to him about what some of the problems are there, the way events are decided, you know, where they want to use their roads and things like that, how congested forest roads are in Wales, and what we need to do to improve that. So a lot of the feature is about bringing people to the table, getting people to discuss some of the issues that go on in national rallying. And, you know, instead of, you know, everyone being quite stubborn about their views and sort of thinking they know better than everybody else, or not wanting to talk to other people about their views, you know, I really wanted to try and be that first person to, well, not the first person, because that makes me sound more important than I've been here, but basically be the person who prominently says, you know, these are some of the problems we've got, and really, if rallying wants to move forward at a national level, it needs to be looked at very seriously, and people need to come together and talk about things rather than, you know, arguing with views that they think other people have. So, you know, it's all about stimulating that debate. And like I said, you know, I know a lot of people are going to be upset with some of the things they read, or, you know, not going to agree with a lot of it, but I think it needed to be done to bring people to the table, and, you know, hopefully it does stimulate that conversation like we hope it does.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
Trev, you've been around the sport, you know, forever and a day, probably longer than both Jack and I. And that's not because you're older, it's just that I was just simply a fan. You've been a fan, you've been a competitor and everything else. You know, taking a step back and you know, it is a great piece, whether you've read it or not yet, that Jack's put together, and there's some great quotes from various people. Apart from the seeding thing, are we massively different from where we were, say, 20 years ago with regards to rallying?
Different in what way?
Well, obviously, you know, stage quality, you know, competitors, you know, officials being of an older generation, things like that.
Okay, yeah, I get your gist, yeah. So you're right, you know, I joined my local motor club, North Armagh Motor Club, in, well, God, must have been 1978, that's how long ago that was, and started off just by being a marshal, and then built up, I became part of the committee, and then we used to run the Lurgan Park event. I was deputy clerk, of course, of that. From the organisation point of view, I'd get all of it. First off, the article that Jack wrote, the 8-piece supplement, or 8-page supplement that was right at the front of Motorsport News, is fantastic. And I love what he's doing. He's taking it and saying, right, have a talk. Just have a debate about this. What do you think? There are two things come out in the article. One is, as was highlighted, in two or three different pieces, within the context of what Jack was trying to get across, was too many events, too many championships, and that was from people who are stakeholders, like a Martin Wilkinson from CA1 Sport, whose business is around getting as many rally cars out as often as possible. That has always been a huge issue. The big challenge with that is again, the article went on to say, was trying to get somebody who's going to say, right, you're not in, you're not in, you're not in. It doesn't happen like that, and it's not going to happen like that. And it's a hell of a challenge, no doubt about it. It's great that we've got David Richards as the chairman of the MSA now. And he's got an immense pool of talent that he can pull in. Not just people in motorsport, but other government bodies and other sports. People who have been working with him in ProDrive have gone on to do things like that. So he's taken such a broad view. He's getting the right people in. But it's effectively like the civil servants, you know. It's not just something you can go in and run a business the way he runs ProDrive and the other businesses that he's been successful with. There's so many people have got so many irons and fires and things that they want to promote, and it's just trying to get everybody to pull together to see the bigger picture. And once we get that sorted out, then we can turn to Brexit and sort that out, because what a good experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. See, when I first, you know, and again, this the debate isn't necessarily happening today. This will be an ongoing thing, folks. So if you please get involved. But certainly when I first became involved in rallying, which was 19, you know, I was watching probably early 90s all the way. Well, I went to my first rally when I was 8 and 43 now, but I really got into a position where I could go out and watch on my own, you know, kind of late teens and everything else. But when I started competing, we still had Ancro and we still had BTRDA and we still had BRC. So we had three major championships in this country. And I still don't quite know how we sustained those three championships. Now, Trev, again, I'll come to you first. You were around. I don't remember those. I don't remember Ancro being a struggling championship until, ironically, they brought in the control tire, which was Pirelli, and that's when it seemed to fall over. But prior to that, we had a very, very strong Ancro series where you had, Marcus Dodd, people like that, Chris Mellors, Brian Lyle, all those guys. Mm-hmm. BRC was doing its thing, and that was where the work teams were. Obviously, when you were there, with like Vauxhall and, Renault and all the guys at F2 and things like that. And then BTRDA was very, very much, you step up from single venue. Now, we lost Ancro, and you would argue now you walk into a BTRDA service park and there is serious money being spent. Serious money. There's world cars there, not quite latest generation, but, last of a generation of 2016 world cars and things like that, Focus world cars and things like that. There is so much money being spent. Now, these guys that are spending that money, they're well within rights. They've earned the money and that's what they want to do. And I haven't got one of those cars. I've got something a bit smaller, but I've got my right. I want to go and do that rally. But do we all as individuals think about the guy that's still trying to do it in a £1,000 micro? And I don't believe we do. And I believe that's probably where the problem starts to happen for getting people involved.
It's a difficult one. It's a difficult one, isn't it? It's how do you get people interested in rallying when, we're at a time where the discipline itself is probably least promoted than it's ever been from a sort of general point of view. We don't need to go into 1995 and what was happening then and Fleet Street and all the newspapers that rallying was in, but it is really struggling from an image point of view in the wider sense, obviously within rallying. We've got more tools than ever to promote it with Twitter and Facebook and all this kind of stuff, but outside of rallying there's a real lack of promotion and making people aware of the sport. And then you've got to tie that into the fact that motor clubs are dwindling memberships than they've ever had before, so there's less people banging the drum for rallying and there's less people making a noise about rallying as well. So it's kind of a those people you're talking about, Tony, the people in the two-wheel drives, the majority of them are going to be younger drivers, aren't they? They're going to be the people who are starting out, but where are they going to hear about rallying? If their dad's not done it, or if their mum's not done it, or if their granddad's not done it, that for me is a massive issue, because if people aren't learning about rallying, they aren't hearing about it, then they're not going to go and do it, are they? And it's an expensive sport to get into, and part of the I hear every week people complaining about how much it costs to put new belts in your car and that seats shouldn't be 5 years aged. And, this year we've got to put a fire extinguisher in. Next year we're going to have to do this. Next year we're going to have to do that. And, I can completely, completely understand where they're coming from, because the cost of entry is high. But while that is happening, and something that I have tried to point out in this week's issue is, if these are things that people like insurers need to see happening for rallying to go ahead, then they need to go ahead. And we need to find ways of introducing these things over a longer period, or giving people more lead time in order to put things like this in their car, so that the costs are being reduced. Because there's people, spoke to Matt Endine for my piece this week, and he's on the rallies committee, the MSA rallies committee, and drives a 1400 micro. And he's talking about, he knew this change was happening with the fire extinguisher, and he was able to sell his old one on eBay and recoup a lot of the cost. So things like this, we need to be doing a better job of letting people know what changes are happening when, and giving them more lead time to prepare their cars to be ready. But also we need more within the sport as well as outside the sport. We need more promotion about these things happening, so that people know why safety changes are being made, what they need to do about that, because the barriers of entry to rallying, and we need to explain to people to do these things, because it's at the minute it's people angry about their seats and their belts and things like this, when in actual fact we need to be doing a better job of helping
again,
them. They need to do
it. I don't from this particular angle, but I speak to a lot of people at various levels of rallying, and you've done it at the highest level, and you've done it at the bottom floor, as it were, and I go to certain events, and I'll go to a single venue and I'll see a world car there and I'm left scratching my head, and then I'm completely conflicted, because then I go back to what I said before. Well, it's his money, you know, her money, whoever it may be. They're well within the rights to do that. But does that, should we be trying to funnel people with that particular equipment in a certain direction to allow the lower reaches actually flourish a little bit more?
No, I think it should be a marketing account, and those guys should be able to do, you know, just, I want to just change the thought a little bit and think about the regulation of cars and the rule books, and the blue book in the UK is massively thick. And then there's a karting regulation, I think, with more regulations on top of that. And it's all about what you can't do. Everything is focused on what you can't do. And I had this discussion with David Lapworth at the Autosport show recently, and there's three or four of us, Liam Clogger, that we remember rallying when you used to be able to pitch up. A friend of mine bought an RS2000, put a roll cage in the back of it, and off he went rallying. Okay, that was it. Just a couple of bits of safety equipment. What's to stop a modern car now? Some of the, you know, take a Honda Civic, you know, one of the sharp Civic. What's the sporty model, Tony? You
the
remember?
Civic Type R.
Yeah, Type R. So somebody buys a Type R Civic and they want to go and do a hill climb on it. That car is a standard road car, is a lot stronger than a GTI Golf was in Mark 1, Mark 2. So road cars now are really, really strong. And if you take somebody who just wants to pitch up and not even need to wear a helmet, that type of thing, there's nothing for those types of cars. So taking a fast road car, slight modification, so it can go out and compete in an off-road environment where they can have a bit of fun with the car, because they can't do that on the road now. They can go and do track days. What's the equivalent of that? And then regulate what they can do as opposed to what they can't do. I think that's probably an area that I think that David Richards will look at.
You know what? That's a really, really good thing, isn't it? Actually, you know what? I've never really thought about it like that before. Maybe if we said what you can do, it might actually entice people in. Do you reckon, Jack? Jack? Jack just bailed on us.
Sorry, I'm still here. Sorry about that. It's a lot of what Ryan's talking about with the RGT program that we've talked a little bit about in MN. If you don't know about that, then at the minute in the UK, new cars that are over 3 litres are not allowed to compete. It's a rule that's been in place since 2009, I think. I wrote about it last week. I've forgotten already. But it basically means there's some brilliant rally cars out there, that, like BMW M3s and Porsche Boxsters and Caymans and things like that, that could be good, relatively low-cost rally cars. And at the minute, they're not able to compete, and it's a bit silly because we've got 2 litre turbo cars competing out there that have got far more power than a Cayman will ever have. And the other thing to consider is, as Trevor quite rightly mentioned, from a safety aspect, it's much better to get these kind of cars involved in sport, because a Porsche Cayman is designed to go quickly, but it's also designed to crash quickly. There's a lot of safety it's not designed to crash, hopefully you never crash it, but it's designed to be sustainable in a crash, if it is going at speed. And these are the kind of things we need to be thinking about moving forward, and like Trevor says, mate, finding out what cars we can use to compete and opening things up a little bit.
I think it's great, and again, let's keep this going. The discussion doesn't need to end today, it actually starts today. So folks, if you want to get involved, to get hold of all of us, really. So and let's keep it going. If you want to send something a bit more substantial, in more than the how many characters you're allowed now on Twitter, obviously you can email us as well, which is studio@absoluterally.co.uk. Let's get it in and we can keep talking about it. Boys, we're at the very, very, very tail end of the program. We're at our any other business section. So I will ask Jack Benyon, do you have any other business this week?
I do.
All right, Trev, do you have one?
I do.
Okay, that's good. I'm going to do mine first, if that's all right. Not very often I do. Yeah, I'm going to do mine first. Opening round of the BTRDA Gravel Championship this weekend. We are out in our little R2 car for our first of our many, well, not too many events, but we'll be doing a handful of events this year. Did a test yesterday at Phil Price's Rally School, and it was amazing because it was snow and ice, and even Phil Price didn't think he'd turn up today, because it's a little bit lively out there. And when Phil says that to you when you go to his place, yes, it was. So how much information we gleaned from that test yesterday for what we'll transfer across the Cambrian, I really, really don't know. It's going to be interesting. I genuinely can't wait. I am like a kid in a toy shop, and I've got no idea where we'll be. But there's 9 or 10 R2s out there. And I said it on social media. I'm not embarrassed to say it. if you've got an R2 car, it seems to be the place to be this year. And it's great. Bring on the competition. And that's what stories are told. And I was talking to somebody about this only the other day. We always look back on great stories of when we competed against various people. And I love that idea of us all being out there. So, and there's some young men who I'm very envious of because I'm pretty much twice their age.
Some very quick lads in there as well. You'll have a good time.
Yeah,
on Saturday, I'm sure.
Not. I've lowered my expectations for this coming weekend. We've changed some things for this weekend, which Trev's talked to me about. It's fine. It's all under control. But we will be going to just bed ourselves in gently, shall we say, with some of the changes we've made. So I'm looking forward to it. And obviously, there's a couple of lads who are doing BRC. William Crichton, I think, is going to be there in the 208 R2. He's going to be on it. He was quick when we did BRC with him as well, and good on him. He's using it as an opener. And as I say, Cambrian this weekend. Read an article. I'm not going to get too bogged down on this, but apparently they're trying to make some inroads into being around the BRC. I'm not entirely sure why at the moment. And again, maybe that's a different debate for a different day, because I'm pretty certain we're not in a situation where we'll have championship sharing events moving forward. But still, there you go. It looks like it's a very good entry, 120 cars, I think it is, for this coming weekend. I just hope the stages stand up to it. I hope we don't lose too much mileage, and hopefully the snow and ice will stay away from the rally. So if you're out there, folks, say hello. It's always nice to have a chat with people. So, you know where we'll be anyway. Jack Benyon.
Yes. My any other business is a little bit left field. In fact, it's amazingly left field. But if you've read this week's MN, you might. Can you guess where I'm going to go with this, Tony? I like to play this game.
No.
Actually. Can you guess? My any other business is from MN, and it's nothing we've talked about.
Wow.
Already.
You see, you've got me now to the point where I'm questioning perhaps where you got that share from in your photograph. I'm thinking, is Jack going to take his shopping, online shopping maybe? I'm not sure. Whether he's going to take his historic, whether he's going to take his two-wheel drive rallying, I really, really don't know. And then I'll look at it, and I'll be honest with you, I love one of the pictures that was used in David Evans' piece that he wrote as well about it, which is, of course... Yeah,
I got those pictures. Which one do you like?
It's just... Is that where you're going?
Yeah, no, it's not. But that's a very good picture. That's Chris Hewish from Rally Sport Media. Shout out to him because that's a mega picture, and he's a very good photographer.
He's a good guy, Chris. But that's okay, not go where on, I was going. Going.
Ferrari.
Oh, I you know what? I didn't see that coming.
Here we
go on. Well, now you've said it. It's actually it was between that and of course, and the RS 1700T.
Yes, that's also a very good place to go.
I wasn't
going to
do it. Right, before you crack on, Trev, do you ever remember a guy who used to be, he was around rallying, he went rallying for years, called Ian Harwood? He did a lot of Motor News Championship stuff back in the day, Mark 1 Escorts, and he had a company that used to break Escorts, RSs and stuff like that, and I used to go over there as a kid, and on the sticker of his business, it was Ian Harwood Competition Cars and Equipment, and the picture was an RS 1700T. And I had it on my bedroom door, and I can still remember the phone number. It was 051 because it was before 051 339 2801. I can still remember the phone number. Now, I've go left field again. Sorry, Jack. I realise I've jumped on yours, but I heard
That's
a story,
right.
And this was verified. He did a road rally once, or he did a stage rally. And it was before cages and stuff like that, and he turned up, and his co-driver, the belt had snapped. Right, and he arrived at arrival control, and his co-driver had been tied into the seat with the tow rope. that was a story I was told by him. So there you go. Anyway, Jack, you were going to talk about a Ferrari, my friend.
Well, now you've mentioned the Escort, we should probably explain what that's about, shouldn't we? So there was a Group B project for the RS 1700T, which Ford started but didn't finish, and there's five surviving, and the very brilliant Ian Gwynn, who you will definitely recognise cars that he's run, much like the Subaru Legacy that he's got, is very nice in Richard Burns BP and multicoloured livery, which ran at Race Retro last year. I think Harry Vatanen drove it actually. And he's, I know he's helped Ryan Champion out a lot with his Impreza and bits and bobs. He's kind of a go-to guy for that, that era of car. So he's rebuilt that, and it looks absolutely staggering. Pick up a copy of MN to have a look at it. No plug intended. So should we go to the Ferrari now?
Let's do it.
I'm just flicking through my paper because I want to feel the joy of seeing the page that I've put together for MN this week. So Rally Reports in MN this week, the single page, has a picture of a Ferrari at the top of it and a picture of a 6R4 at the bottom of it. Does it get any better than that? So at last week's South Down stages, which is at Goodwood, which is interesting in itself because Goodwood doesn't get many event, motorsport events through the year, and this rally is definitely the quietest of all the events they have. It's not particularly well publicised by the event, by the circuit, sorry. It's kind of a quiet single venue rally that's just done on Goodwood, but it makes some good pictures. There's a nice background with Goodwood, and anyone who's listened to the podcast before know that I like circuit racing as well. So I was very excited to see a Ferrari 308 Michelotto Group 4 car win the event outright. And this is Lee Jones, who's the son of Kevin Jones, who also has one of these Michelottos. Kevin worked for Michelotto back in the day, decided that he had a lot of parts knocking around, and built up some shells that he had. So he's got two of these cars now. I think he might even have a third. He's got a fantastic garage where he's got an ex-Stig Blomqvist Saab. He's got two Renault 5 turbos, not the one, the two. One's in Marlboro livery and one's in that black and gold livery. I can't remember what the company was for that, but another stunning sort of well-known Ragnotti livery. So he's built a Ferrari and his son won an event in it, which is absolutely fever. And we reckon, also I'm reliably told, that the last time a Ferrari won a rally outright was in 1985, and it was Tony Walsh.
There you go, and I've actually seen that car. But anyway, there you go. Trevor Agnew, you got any other business for this week, sir?
Any other businesses relating to Sweden? Just all the tests that are going on at the minute, it always brought me back to when you went to those conditions for the first time in a year, because you only really did one snow rally. And it was the first run on the first test that you did. So in other words, as soon as you get in the car, if it was proper snow, on studs, and off you set. The driver might have the engineer with him, up and down maybe, and you get in, and at full breathneck speeds, it was just the most mind-blowing thing. The only way I can equate it is, if you've ever been on an escalator or the moving walkways in an airport, and your muscle memory, you've been doing it for years, and then you go to one and it's stopped. And no matter how much you try not to do the big step onto it, you'll always do the big step onto it. And there's lots of university papers and scientists who tell you how long it takes to unlearn that. And it's a bit like that when you get into a car in snow and ice the first time, because snow and ice means it's going to be slippery and you're going to die. So therefore, the inherent DNA in you is completely resistant to it. And it is a bit, your head does go a little bit funny when you're doing those speeds in snow and ice. So that was just something that reminded me of that. The second thing is some of the practicalities when you do a rally in snow and ice that you haven't done for a while. So if you get a puncture in the stage, for example, and the normal thing to do is screw the bolts off really quickly and throw them down beside you. Of course, if you pop them down on snow that's 4 or 5 inches deep, they just disappear. So hence, we always had wheel nuts ready, taped onto the jack or taped onto the nut gun or whatever, for those types of things. And the other thing that will rear its head over the rally over the next couple of days or over the weekend will be the normal snowbank issues. So snowbanks, as we know, can be really hard if the vent's good and the ice is there. You can have a solid one that you can lean on the outside of the corners, which is great. But if it breaks, then it'll suck you in, it'll drag you in. But what you will see is you'll notice on the split times, it depends on on all live coverage this year, but you see the odd times, split times, maybe a minute down or a minute and a half down, and then you realise when the car gets to the end of the stage that the front of it's covered in snow or ice, or they've stopped and they've had to clear it. So if you're coming into a junction and you ditch hook a little bit too much, in other words, you cut too much on the inside, and the air vents get full up with snow and ice, and then the engine temperature goes up. So those are the things to look out for on Rally Sweden, which is just a little bit more of an insight, and things that we'll forget about until the action starts.
That's why we have Trevor Agnew on our podcast, because he tells you all about what happens with hot nuts. That's insight that you and I, Jack, could never have dreamt up.
Hey, all the outside.
No, me too.
I love those pieces of information. It's really cool to know what the pros do when they're doing things like that, because it's something you just don't think about under normal circumstances. You would never watch a rally and think, I wonder what they do if they lose some wheel nuts. Jack, but that is actually a really cool piece of information.
You know what we do, Jack, in order to compensate? You'll see it in the service park sometimes anyway, the guy's using them. You get a little magnetic dish. So you pop up on the side of the car and then you throw the nuts onto that and it sticks in the side of the car.
There you go. Oh, cool. Trevor brings answers and probably I and sometimes Jack pretty much create more questions than answers. Folks, we will be back next week. We will, of course, be talking about what happened on Rally Sweden. We may even talk about what happened with what I got up to at the weekend. Depends how it goes, eh? But, folks, we do appreciate your time and we do appreciate your download. If you could leave us a review on iTunes, it really does make a difference. It really does help us with regards to talking to some of the marketing people we're talking to at the moment. Boys, are you same time, same place next week? There you go. Yep. Folks, we will be back in your little podcast hole this time next week.